because
to make it shorter, everything, and bigger the.
The font should be bigger. This font should be bigger. This font should be a little bigger. This font should be a little bigger.
But the whole graph can be compressed.
Possibly, yeah. Okay, so let's see. So let's go to the new stuff with the clusters and.
This is the old stuff.
Okay.
Those are revised.
And this, do we still need this?
I think it's important to focus.
Okay, we can come back to this then.
Oh, okay.
So where are the clusters?
So one of the things is this table 6.
Uh-huh.
I put it out here just to prove that the even the median accuracy
here, meaning what is the
content? Modeling section,
mm-hmm.
not the experiment section.
Mm-hmm.
I put it because just to prove that why we further need sub-modeling or multi-resolution modeling
mm-hmm.
to give some data beforehand.
Okay.
Although this data is repeated again in the big table.
We could possibly not repeat it because we already have.
So we can just refer?
Yeah, we could refer back to this table.
Okay.
Right? That may be one possibility, but let's see. And that's not key at this point. So then, okay, let's see. Let me go through this carefully. So you're configuring ANN. You configured the global ANN,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you start. Then you after you configure, you get this, or this is after optimization.
After the ensemble averaging.
After ensemble averaging. Okay. So after ensemble averaging, we have these error numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
then the what is the problem here? And
no, hold on. So what is the conclusion of this table?
Stable is that average errors are still high, average and 90 percentile errors are still really high.
Okay.
You know, for especially for some of the benchmarks.
Okay.
So we need more than a single global model.
Okay.
And then we discuss what are the two approaches.
How do we introduce this graph?
This graph is to prove to motivate the multi-resolution modeling. That some of the errors are just on the lower output side.
Right, so we are saying that after looking at this, we realize that there are several testing points that have low prediction accuracy, and we wanted to look at the distribution of errors. Okay? And the outcome of this graph is? Hello? Hello?
Hello, hi Raju.
Hi Ajay. Okay, so we just got started.
Okay.
Sajib and Ming are also here. Okay, so let's. So we going through section 4, discussing each subsection and table and data one by one. Just to make sure that we have everything, and because Sajib needs to leave in a couple of days, and he wanted to. Just go through all the data to see if there is any other experiments that he could possibly do before he left. That's the only thing that he cannot do very easily from India.
True. I think if all the experiments are done, then it's easier, and for all of us also to coordinate, and writing is much easier.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going through section 4. We are in 4.3 right now. With the figure 4. Okay. So the outcome of figure 4 is, which is the percentage prediction error.
Distribution of percentage prediction error across the output.
Right, distribution of the percentage prediction error. Well, the other thing which Sajid, you need to do is to, well, you can change these labels, right, later? because we'll probably have to find new, you know, may have to find different names for what.
Those I can do it from India.
That you can do. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So what is the outcome? Is that the high errors are
in the lower side of the output.
In the lower output range.
Mm-hmm.
And that motivates the multi-resolution modeling.
Yes.
Okay. And then what? Okay.
Then so the procedure
for multi-resolution modeling. How do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need any data to demonstrate this procedure?
I think I wrote it down in the,
okay,
some of the examples from the benchmark.
Okay.
Just to motivate how we did.
Does this use any clustering, the multi-resolution modeling?
No.
So it's manual?
It's a little manual. It's a careful. I mean, I also repeated the procedure with clustering.
Okay.
But there are some tricks needs to be done. I mean, if you put all the details, it will be really huge.
Okay, that's... But at a high level, can we have a, you know...
At a high level, yes.
A description of how this thing can be automated? I mean, how do I create a multi-resolution model automatically?
Yeah.
So, what does a user need to know?
User need to do the global model first.
Mm-hmm.
And then do a clustering on the, essentially can do a clustering on the error values.
Mm-hmm.
If they can differentiate, if the errors are that skewed in case of Ruby, you can identify a cluster. You can match the error to a specific region of the input. Just we can do in the sum modeling. So that's the automation process.
Right, so there is a clustering involved.
I didn't do it by employing the cluster, but I also tried. Later I tried with the clustering. It can be done. It can be automated.
But do we describe that here in the multi-resolution?
Not explicitly.
Right. So it would be important to say what kind of cluster, how the multi-resolution model would be developed. Right.
Okay. Because I didn't disclose it because I disclosed the clustering in the sub-modeling, the procedure. So if I disclose the clustering here, then I need to put probably shift the clustering procedure before.
What do you think should be done? I mean, for someone who's trying to do multi-resolution modeling using your paper, do they need to know about clustering or no?
No.
They don't need to?
They don't need to.
Okay. So how would they do it then? How do they create the multi-resolution model?
If they just plot the error percentage versus output value or something like that.
You mean manually observe the?
I mean those. Even any tool, they have those kind of charts automatically generated.
No, I know you can generate the chart, but from the chart you still need to figure out how to create the multi-resolution model, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
I mean, if everything has to be automated, then clustering comes into picture too.
Should everything be automated or no?
Yeah, just as much as possible.
Okay, well, it's not that you should do what I'm telling you, but I mean, you need to be convinced yourself that this is the right way to do things, right? I mean, and I don't know, maybe you have an argument for
I don't have a counter argument for not automating or counter argument against automation, but little things I left it intuitively. Or
I mean, I don't understand what that means, but because in a paper you have to describe sufficiently enough so someone can reproduce what you did, right? So, I guess my question is the description of the multi-resolution model.
I think the description is very clear. when you can do multi-resolution and what.
But how to do it? But how to do multi-resolution modeling for someone who doesn't want to get involved in the data, right? I mean, if someone wants to, let's say, write a tool that does everything, right? I mean, are we expecting some sysadmin to look at the data and create these models like the way you are doing? Or are we imagining that there would be a tool that the system administrator would use or whoever is managing the system would use that does all of this modeling and provides a prediction of the performance? What are we thinking of here? I mean, what is the intent of this paper? Right, the intent of this paper is to show that all of this is feasible and can be packaged into some sort of a tool, right? And the tool cannot, or ideally should not have some intervention of manual processes in between whatever it does. Right, so that's the way I see it. But I don't know if that's is the same way you see it, or if you agree with me, or you see it differently.
I agree with you. I mean, it can be done. I didn't do it automatically, but it can be done.
Okay, so if it can be done, then we should describe how it can be done, right?
It's very simple to describe.
Okay. So, but are you saying that this already, the description does all of that, or there needs to be some additions then?
There needs to be some addition. Some of the parts from here should go there. Because
okay.
If it's clustering based, then better put it there.
Okay. Okay, that's good. So let's do that. Let's say we figured out the multi-resolution model and how to automate that. What is the next part of the story here?
The sum model.
Right. Why though? I mean, why?
Why? Because multi-resolution, because the errors, the clustering based errors doesn't lead to well-defined clusters. If the errors are not skewed towards one dimension, then the clustering won't generate well-defined clusters. So in those cases, we need to resort to more generic approach. So that generic approach we describe as sub-modeling.
Okay, so I guess the question is the sub-modeling motivated in this section?
Yes.
Okay. But not with data, just with some hypothesis.
Hypothesis, yes.
Okay, so we have some previous motivation for multi-resolution with data, and the motivation for sub-modeling is without data. I'm just wondering if a reader will expect data-based motivation here as well, because you provided data-based motivation earlier.
Because I'm not going to college.
So, what should we do here? Maybe we can present some data to motivate why multi-resolution modeling may not be good enough. So what could that data be?
That data is just, you can take the same kind of graph, error versus output, but not with the rubies, but the benchmarks where the errors are not skewed.
I mean, this sort of a graph?
This sort of a graph.
Or this sort of a table?
No, I think graph is better.
Can you represent this graph in a different way?
What? How?
I don't know what. Kind of. Sparse.
Yeah.
Doesn't look good.
I mean,
maybe a bar chart will be.
What's happening to the errors here? What happened?
There are no data points on those corresponding outputs.
There are no data points?
No.
But how do you have sorted output points?
Oh. No, it's by value. It's not enumerated.
Value of the output. Oh, I see. Well, one thing which we could do is to enumerate the output value, but that would not give the same kind of information that this thing gives.
I think it's partially suggesting, so we could do a bar graph, just the average. Because I imagine low region, the average would be much higher than high region. We suggest the average and the standard deviation.
But then, what the sorted output point? Have the sorted output?
Yeah, the x-axis is the same. We can.
But then the averages in this range will.
Yeah,
be zero.
We can remove that. Yeah, we just keep the place where we have data.
Because if it goes to zero, then
This is,
then it is misinformation.
Right. There's no data. Right. We have to put it in something like that.
And I guess you're putting something like NA would be more appropriate.
Right. You can do a bar for every 10, maybe.
Or 10 or
every 6. Yes.
I think if you do a bar graph on 20, 0 to 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 60, that may work. See, three bar graphs.
Three bars.
You can use more bars.
No, more bars will be reduced because if you have more bars, then between 10 to 20, you will have the bar will be zero. The height of the bar will be zero. Between 10 to 20.
Because then for those bars, you can just say, you don't have to not be close.
You can say it.
But I agree. I think that sort of a bar chart would be more. I mean, this is good enough, but it's not very nice to look at.
Yeah, it's hard to understand.
It just takes a little bit of time to comprehend
what
exactly it means.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so...
And bar will also reduce the space quite a bit. You will have the bar graph because it's just a small...
Then probably we can do something like for rubies, one bar graph like that, and for file bench OLTP, which doesn't have good results for multi-resolution, like in the same place.
Okay.
So we can squeeze out this place and just to put two graphs there. One for motivating multi-resolution, one for which doesn't work for multi-resolution.
But whether you want to squeeze it this way or this way, I think either way is fine.
Because bar graph can substantially reduce that.
Okay, so you can work on that.
Yeah.
I mean, think about what if you squeeze this way as or this way. And if you squeeze it this way, then you can actually decouple these two bar charts. And put the second guy where it is more relevant, which is after the multi-resolution.
Oh,
right.
I see. Okay.
So think about that. So once we have the database submodeling, then motivation for submodeling, then that would be good. So then here the submodeling description is that also complete?
This is a more automated point of view.
Okay. Okay, so here how you're doing the submodeling again is clustering based.
Right? On output.
On output values.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are more details, right? Which is when to use submodeling and when not to use submodeling. Based on cluster overlap.
Based on cluster overlap.
So where is all that information and data?
The data is on the experiment section.
Just another quick thought. Sometimes I do is just what is the result of the paper, making that as a table format in a single, so that's mean to say the single snapshot. And I say, okay, these are the headed column header may be sub modeling, multi sub resolution, global model, and etc. And on the horizontal axis, you have the different criteria of the application characteristics, really. And the cost map that when you use this one, when you use this one. Is there something that's possible that comes out of the.
I mean, whether to use.
When to use which one? really. Can you describe that in a table format in a very concise way?
From a conceptual standpoint, from a high level.
Yeah, from a high level standpoint, at the end of the paper, really. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the result of the whole exercise.
I think that would definitely be useful for someone reading the paper. But whether it can be done or not is, I guess it could be, right? But how do we come up with sort of descriptive terms for when what are the characteristics of applications where submodeling works? And those are, that's what would need work.
One may be it may not be characteristic error for you, whatever we are saying in the word, mm-hmm. like high uniform distribution of the error
mm-hmm.
across the output region.
Mm-hmm.
That's a criteria for
mm-hmm.
submodeling.
Not much resolution.
Submodeling.
Yeah.
Then high concentration of the error within a specific output value region.
Mm-hmm.
That's a constant for the
mm-hmm.
this one. Something like those things. Really.
Yeah, if we can make that very useful, then if we can make that rich enough that it's interesting to read, and then certainly we should put it, right?
So this paper, it sounds to me that the multinational solution is not the way to go. It sounds to me that some modeling is the way to go. We should either use some modeling or just global model. Is that the conclusion of the...
Not really.
Are the cases that much resolution are better than some other?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not.
It's not better. I would say it's not better. Is at par some other.
Then
why do we need that?
Why do we need much resolution?
That's why you don't need that.
I can remember there are few, at least with my implementation, not with the MATLAB, at least with my implementation, I have the median error, average error, some multi-resolution and some more are at par.
Okay.
But the 90 percentile errors in both of the benchmarks are lower than some models.
Okay.
So some models, so multi-resolution models, because we are focusing on the high concentration error points only, it can have higher control over those outlier points.
Okay.
Than some models.
Okay. So you're saying in general, some models is always better.
Not better.
Some modeling is better, or much. Some modeling is always better than much resolution.
Than not much resolution, than global model. Because
global model.
Global
okay.
model.
But what the Kojic is suggesting is comparing much resolution and some modeling. So in which scenario should we use much resolution and which
scenario? That's not because based on the last discussion we had, that we haven't picked up a clear winner in the cases where both can be done. That's still undecided as of now.
What do you mean?
Because I haven't specifically mentioned in the cases where both have the same same advantage, which one to go for.
Both have the same accuracy, you mean?
Same accuracy.
Okay.
They have the same accuracy? In which case do they have the same accuracy?
Let's say for both the Ruby's benchmark, the median and average accuracies for both submodel and average, submodel and multi-resolution modeling are at par, the same level, but 90 percentile errors is for both the Ruby's benchmarks is the accuracy is better than the submodel.
So accuracy is better in multi-resolution.
Multi-resolution.
So why are you saying that multi-resolution submodeling are the same? You are in fact saying that multi-resolution modeling is better because it provides more control over 90th percentile error numbers, right? Aren't you saying that? Or maybe I misinterpreted what you're saying.
Yeah, based on the data I have, so there are, it's not clear who is the winner. So that's my point, because at least for the both of the benchmarks, I see that the average error in one benchmark for multi-resolution modeling is better,
mm-hmm.
substantially better than some modeling. But in other cases, in the other benchmark, is it at the same level? in one benchmark, the median error is better in some model, but the multi-resolution modeling is worse. So it's not clear who is the winner. If you look at one dimension, maybe one is the winner. If you look at the 90% of dimension, maybe multi-resolution is the
winner. But isn't that, a lot of research is like that, and then you have to dig deeper. Okay, the conclusions are not at the surface, right? The conclusions are more, require more effort to dig out, right? So you have to say, qualify your statements. And if you say something like, oh, it's not clear who's the winner, then it's up to the, you know, whoever is reading to figure out what the message is, right? But it's our job when we are writing papers to bring the messages out in the clearest possible way. So I think what you're saying is that in some cases, multi-resolution model is actually better than sub-modeling. And then we should identify in which way, in which cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
And talk about that. And then there is no longer any confusion because you clearly specify that for this scenario, multi-resolution model works better.
Mm-hmm.
And then in these other scenarios, sub-modeling works better. So there is no longer confusion, right? It's all clear because you identify at a more fine grain what it is that you're talking about.
Okay.
Right. So can we make such a statement or not is the question that you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Given the output values, the output error, output error values, do you know that which order to use? Looking at the distribution or anything like that, do you know what model to use? So you don't know.
Or, I mean, to put it slightly differently, let's say someone wants to use this, you know, the findings of this paper. Do they have a clear path?
Yeah, that's the next thing. If he knows that, I was saying, okay, then articulate that. Why do you know that?
Yeah.
Okay. And then if you express that, then that will be, can be used by some, me to find out, okay, which one to use. Now, if you do not know that, okay, if you yourself is confused that, okay, by looking at the output, I do not know which one to use, then yes, you cannot do anything. Because you as a human being should be able to take the first decision.
So where do we go?
Well, at the end you have to give a clear conclusion. The conclusion may be that, okay, yes, we have tried everything, but we could not find a consistent result, and maybe global model and sub-modeling is the two choices. So multi-resolution model is not required. That means that is also a valid conclusion to me. That is a definitely valid conclusion. But if that is the conclusion, we need to say that.
And I think multi-resolution modeling has a point.
Okay, so then we need to articulate that and make that part of the conclusions and the story of the paper, right?
Okay. So why are you thinking? Thing is that sub-modeling may, the multi-resolution modeling is, if you do multi-resolution modeling, the distribution of error is more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So there are fewer outliers or higher outliers in that, those because of the 90% of value is so less than sub-model.
Mm-hmm.
So most likely the errors are more uniform.
What's the reason for that?
Because those benchmarks, those behavior is that on those low allocations, the behavior is very random and very abrupt.
Mm.
So there is steady decline or steady high, or small change in allocation may lead to, or because of the error values, so output values is so less, any prediction is any prediction is not as accurate enough. So what multi-resolution modeling does is specially focus on that part of the benchmark. But clustering may not lead to, because you are doing an automated clustering, it may not lead to that area specifically.
But eventually, even for multi-resolution, it will also be based on clustering, right?
Yeah, but we are doing error-based clustering on those cases.
So the difference is in the clustering method?
Difference is in the clustering method.
But if I just think about the principles behind these two methods, right? So in multi-resolution, we use a high-resolution model focusing on a small area, and for the rest, we use the global model, right? And then in principle, for some modeling,
is we have not only a model focused on a small area, we have another model for the rest of the area.
In multi-resolution.
In some modeling.
In some modeling, we do separate models.
Yes. So it's the difference is, in principle, is in much resolution, we use the global model for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
But in some model, we use a different model. Right?
Yeah.
Then in principle, some model ratio will always be better than global model, than much resolution.
But the clustering is different.
Yeah, if the clustering is done this, in the same way, I'm just talking intuitively, you know, in principle. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because the global model is always harder to capture
everything,
right? The global model would always be harder to train. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the clustering is what makes much resolution better than some modeling.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe another reason is you don't have enough data points to train some models. And the global model has more data points.
Mm-hmm.
So if the high error error is really small, then you still have a lot of good data points to train the rest of the global model
mm-hmm.
to make it work well. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you do some models, maybe either of them have good enough number of data points to train it well. I'm just thinking. So you did have a, you did provide a discussion like this somehow.
These are the kind of things I was looking.
Yeah, these are the insights I think.
Right.
These are the things that is required.
And the insights are need to be developed better. And I certainly agree that if the clustering is different, then that's one reason, and the other is insufficient data points for building good submodels,
right.
And therefore the global model works better.
Yeah, the end, you know, from all of our comments is we need to give the readers a clear message. What's the way to go? Which way is the right way to go? And if the reader has to make a decision, what are the criteria for making the decision?
Right. And I think the point is to provide enough insights that the reader is convinced that, you know, the direction that you're showing him is actually valid, right? To provide enough data as well as enough insights into the data, right? And I think both are equally important. One approach is, okay, here's the data, and you can see that the percentage error is lower here and the percentage error is higher there, and therefore you should use this and not that, right? And the other approach is, okay, here's the data, and
mm-hmm.
the percentage error is lower here and higher there, and this is why the percentage error is lower here, and this is why the percentage error is higher there, right? And in fact, our message is more complex than that. We have all kinds of clustering going on and other parameters involved, so we have to have insights everywhere, right? And that's what makes for a really interesting paper to read. So I think that those aspects of the paper should be developed more, the insights, right? And I agree that, you know, the reader has to have a clear message and be convinced that that message is right, at the end of the paper. So I think those two points that you mentioned definitely need to be brought up in the paper.
Right. But don't just take whatever I said, because whatever we say in the discussions, we need to have data to support it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if we say because we don't have enough data points to train some models, then we have to show that
mm-hmm.
is the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the data. I think that's something you can easily do when you are in India. You know, think about how you want to
present
this discussion. Run this discussion.
So
make the maximum use of the data.
Because that will be good is your use of your 18-hour flight.
That's actually better. I'm not working all the time just on noting figures and some thinking less like
that. Take all the data in your laptop. Look at
Print
out and
make
backup in case things go wrong. Because right now what is coming out of the paper is okay, these guys have done an excellent job in terms of experiment, has done elaborate experiment, etc. Okay, a lot of things are there. So what? Okay, what is there at the end? That end story is not coming out.
Okay.
When I read the paper, that's what the mindful was coming on. And there are many ways that can be confident that you can look at a couple of papers and find out okay how the end story can be told.
Mm. So I absolutely agree. I think that's something that needs more work. Going back to the paper itself.
So we have this submodeling section, which, I mean, so this part is, the automation is evident. Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
Evident.
It's evident. Okay, that's good. And then we have in section 5,
I don't know why there's 9 coming up everywhere.
Yeah, we had that with the board paper. And
that,
also
that's a LaTeX compilation paper, the same problem. And it just solves a little bit. It's a ticks problem.
What we did in the end was we just VI the PDF and removed that 9 from it.
Okay. Actually, it depends on the compiler. I've solved the problem before. It depends on the how you're compiling it.
Mm.
If you change the compiler sometimes, it may solve the problem.
Yeah.
So what's the reason for this? I've never seen this before.
It's a bug.
In LaTeX?
Oh, okay. Not LaTeX. It's a bug particularly with the IEEE format.
This was not there in the Unix format.
No. In that particular format, the
because they changed the format, it came up.
Yeah.
And how
yeah.
do you VI a PDF?
VI a PDF.
Battery.
No, but there are some parts which are modeled directly in as the ASCII in the PDF itself. So, so yeah, it does work. We've done that before.
Okay.
And you can just delete that character and the PDF is fine. It will display.
Okay.
Yeah, I did that once.
Yeah. Okay. So we have 5.1, which is modeling accuracy, and the first, what is this table here? Oh, that's, okay, why is this table in 5.1?
Because this is used in across the rest of the subsection. I mean, all the different modules.
So shouldn't this be outside?
No, that discussion is only related to the benchmark. Here is we are going to the modeling accuracy.
Oh, this is so 5.1 modeling accuracy is the only section where we talk about all the accuracy.
All the accuracy.
Okay.
Go up.
Another line here.
The table is a little bit. You need to work on the table. The header part.
And you can make this script size or footnote size.
I think script size this is now.
And that would fit this in. Oh, it's already script size?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's script size. The header, I'm saying the header bar is a little bit shifted.
I don't know how to do it. No.
Just remind me, I'll fix it.
Plus, there is a 2.
Yeah, I think you have the actual column there.
Yeah, then that's
the
column.
He should be fixing that. Yeah. He should work on fixing it himself.
Yeah.
Some LaTeX experience. And that can be done in India, by the way.
Yeah. So it's also over this, right? It's over page width, over margin.
Yeah, that's the first thing I noticed. I didn't see this
which
part.
One? Which one?
It's outside
the room. But you can compile LaTeX in a laptop, right?
No, I compile in my machine and then.
So how do work from India?
Remotely.
You have a new laptop which runs Unix and runs SVN and everything.
Yeah.
You should get it all set up.
Okay.
Let's figure it out how to do it.
Take it. Or if you use Windows, I work on Windows and I use MeekTech and WinUnity.
Windows is good.
Okay.
MeekTech is perfect.
Okay. All right. So.
But don't try remotely because there's lots of problems will come up. Don't try.
You don't want to think interactively from India. That would be really bad.
Okay, so. Okay, we need to fix this.
Those values are not there yet? Is Varmel?
Varmel is still taking a little longer than I expected.
Okay.
And then what? What happened here? I mean, why did we have 5 guys up here? And
no, that needs to be changed.
And this guy here.
Yeah, that needs this postmark. Everywhere there is postmark, it needs to be.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Don't forget to do that.
No, that's
otherwise it will be confusing. And then you also described. Okay, here also.
Yeah.
Okay, submodeling. And so all of these errors are. combined here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing which you could do if it doesn't fit is to just, actually it would be good to have the regression and ANN side by side so we can look at all the data at once. One thing which you could do
is the labels could be shorter.
Yeah, instead of having the full thing, you could have a label, one character label here.
Yeah, that will do. A benchmark probably will do something.
No, what you can do is even this one, the benchmark, the first column, you can make it three column, mark the three column.
Yeah,
three column.
Yeah, that's what you do, yeah.
Mm.
Mark the three column, the first column. Mark the three rows.
Two rows.
Yeah, yeah, it should be
multi-row.
Yeah.
Multi-row.
And then you can put the full name there, just rubies. Browsing.
And one row is rubies, and then next row will be browsing. And no line, no horizontal line.
Okay. So then this one, multi-resolution modeling. So accuracy here with the ANN is shown for all the benchmarks, and we already showed that before. So it's just repeated here.
Yes.
Okay.
We repeated only for the global. Not for the others.
Right, for the global.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Maybe I should highlight which is the winner in each case, maybe. I don't know, to bold or something, just to point out. Or leave it as it is.
Yeah, I think that might be useful.
Because it's so many data, then one might be confused which one to look at. At least the median errors across the winning cases.
And I think that would be this row, this column, right?
Yes.
All of that is the winning.
Mm-hmm.
The way I see it. Okay. So that's fine. And then multi-resolution modeling. Where is the data? That's in the next. Okay. Here, this postmark has to change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, the same comments with the figures.
Okay.
Fonts have to be much bigger, right? I think the lines are okay, very visible. So,
how many figures do you have here?
Five. You probably have five, right? So you can probably collapse this into two rows, maybe, instead of three. Or three and then two, something like that.
That's what you can choose.
I think those, because rubies are the same rubies, you can just legend on the left and
right. What you should do is to control the ticks, make this font size bigger, and the size of the figure itself smaller.
Okay.
So that way it doesn't occupy so much space.
Mm.
Yeah. Same here. I mean, we are using a lot of space here to show one in one piece of information. You don't need to. You can make this much smaller.
Mm, okay.
Okay, so then, so the conclusion of 5.1 is the things that we were talking about.
Some winner or something, some insight or something.
You're obsessed with winners, but I think the key is to, you know, like Ming said, is to tell the entire story, okay, and provide all the insights. Why? That's
okay.
And when do we use certain models? I think if we have a table.
Summary of the finding.
Yeah,
and then very difficult to keep the viewers' attention.
We have a discussion section. I think that's the perfect place to put that.
Yeah.
Oh, the discussion section is. I mean, I'm wondering what is the conclusion after the 5.1 of accuracy, right?
Mm.
I mean, after showing all this data, what should the reader take away? Right? It has to be very clear.
Okay.
And
I think the accuracy of the discussion should be put here,
okay,
instead of the general discussion.
Okay, and then the measure of confidence. Okay, what is the conclusion here? Where does this fit in, actually? I don't...
I think it's a little redundant at this point.
Redundant.
I don't know what to, it's just to visualize the error distribution. No, conclusion is only that the errors are still on the lower allocation.
I think, what is the message here? I guess that's the key.
The message is that all those numbers, standard deviation, 90% average or medians, may not be indicator of how the distribution is actually across all the data points. So to aid the distribution, visually aid it, we can think something like the heat map.
Right.
And then we can actually show that, okay, all the errors are skewed at a specific area.
I think this raises a good point. For a given benchmark, there is nothing preventing you from using two models at the same time. See, I'm going to use two models, and if I need to predict in this range of parameters, I would use the first one because the confidence is higher for that model in that range. But then if I'm predicting in a different range, I should use the other model, right? So maybe that kind of discussion would be interesting here in this section.
Okay.
Right.
What is the length of the paper? How?
12 pages.
How are you doing?
13.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I'm thinking how to show it. Yeah.
You could show it, for instance, with two such error distributions.
Yeah, that's something. With multi-resolution and some model.
Yes. And that would make it interesting.
Okay. My concern is that it may look the same, or maybe some darker region here.
But then choose a workload where it's very distinct, right? Where the distributions are different, are quite distinct, or somewhat distinct. Do these two pairs for all workloads, and then say.
This is for what? This is for local shooting mixing for which one? Global?
No, some model. No, it's completely actual. From here on, everything is related to some model.
No, I think here what Sajeev is mentioning is that everything from here on is submodeling.
Oh.
Okay. So that's why I think,
but I can put some.
Yeah, it's better to do that. I think because
they will miss it.
They might miss it, and moreover, the measure of confidence now also includes multi-resolution, so we might actually have to remove this statement.
Okay.
So if we go with the idea that, okay, we can use both models possibly at the same time, but use only one of the model for any given prediction requirement, right, based on the confidence measure in that region.
But if we cannot have, if we have the similar kind of error stack for both the error,
then
that means that both models are equally good.
Yes.
And if they are both equally good, then these numbers will be exactly the same. See, if the error distribution look exactly the same, then these numbers will also look exactly the same, right? Or similar.
There's quite a bit of difference between the global multi-resolution submodel in the R reading, right? Yeah. You have quite a bit of difference on the 90% test.
Well, global is out of the, I think it's out of competition.
R reading, especially here.
Oh, there's something wrong here. These two sets of numbers look exactly the same.
No, yeah, we decided that.
We decided last time that when cases is
same. I see. Okay, then you have exactly this. Okay. Well, in those, well, then maybe you can show it for these cases. If there is some benefit of multi-resolution.
Pick up a scenario where if you can show the difference between the multi-resolution submodel and bring the figure.
Right, and say that, okay, in this range, one model is better, and that other range, the other model is better.
Okay.
Right, and this, and you should say, using measures of confidence, right? And this section can be titled, using measures of confidence for better prediction. What, you know, then you can structure the discussion around that kind of a message. How do you use measures of confidence?
Okay.
Okay, then 5.3 sensitivity analysis. What are we doing here?
Sensitivity analysis is I'm doing the graph. This graph.
Okay.
I'm redoing the graph.
Okay.
It's just how the length, how the training data set length can affect the accuracy.
Okay.
I'm just showing only for some model.
And it's coming up to be okay? The result?
The result, yeah.
Because we had discussion on this one that
we had
the result was
skewed.
Or
little discrepancy, neither. Yeah.
But I think that depends on how you choose the fraction of the training data set, right?
Yeah.
How are you choosing it now?
I'm choosing it more uniformly across input dimension.
But that's what you were doing. You mean uniformly at random, right? Just picking at... Or just making you pick across
equally
the
spaced,
entire range.
Equally spaced.
But we did have a discussion that might not be good enough, and we had to pick, you know, based on representation.
I think we have the same problem last time. If we had picked a complete randomness, there also was discrepancy. But somewhere.
No, I'm not talking about random. I'm talking about based on the density of the entire training data set.
Mm-hmm.
There are more points in some region. You want to pick more points from that region because there is a reason for why there are more training points in that region. In the global, those original training points that you picked were based on some selection criteria, right? That okay, the errors were higher there, therefore we had to have more training points in that region. Now when we are picking a fraction with fewer points, we'll be going through the same procedure, right? So when we sample 60% or 20% of the original training set, again, we should have a similar representation in this partial set, right? But if you pick this uniformly distributed in the input space, then that training set is not going to be right kind of training set. So I thought we had that discussion, and I don't know whether you agreed with me at that point or not, but I thought you
But
did.
Actually, in my training set, is actually uniform distribution of training points.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no sort of intelligence there with respect to how you choose the training data set?
I mean, there is intelligence, but that equally separated, equal distribution helped achieve the accuracy. I mean, for the training points are equally separated in input dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no skewness in my training data set. It's completely uniform.
Mm.
Raju, I have a meeting actually at 9.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I might have to run.
Okay.
And I was just going to say that I'll try to make a pass through section 4 and 5. 3 I did yesterday.
Okay, thanks.
If I have any comments, I'll put them in for Sajib to handle.
Okay, that would be great. Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
All right, so, yeah, we'll update over email.
Yeah, send me an email if you decide to do a few things so that I don't overlap.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just wondering, do you need the system?
You mean the training units? I mean, we have...
My problem is nothing specific to this particular case is coming out of this. It's a normal behavior of any learning-based framework.
Right, because I thought that we had a training data set that was more interesting than that and not uniformly distributed based on our previous work. We came up with this whole...
Actually, if we apply the algorithm, you can get the same kind of behavior.
Okay.
Because the benchmarks are more realistic, so... The more uniformly you can represent the input parameters, the better prediction you can have.
But isn't this behavior, the non-linear behavior, where, for instance, here, happens here, right? Non-linear behavior tells you that, okay, there are some data points that are important because they represent the transition effects, right? For something like this, maybe I agree with you. For something like this, where there is a lot more dynamism, then shouldn't your training data set be more populated in this region to capture this behavior? And it doesn't really matter how many training points you have in this whole region. I mean, wasn't that one of the points of these experiments? And similarly here, I guess, there are some points where the transitions occur and the slope changes, right? So here, drastic drop to not so drastic drop.
Well, there is,
So maybe in your case, you have so many training data points that everything, even if you pick randomly, all those areas are being covered. The problem arises when you do the sensitivity analysis.
Only few data points.
When you have fewer, and then you have all the weirdness coming up.
But I was checking, I mean, in those cases, it's better to go with the uniform thing. Because the more uniformly you can pick up fewer data points, you're more likely that you will capture the trend.
Well, now we have training data points that are uniformly distributed, so the sampling cannot be intelligent anymore. Right? We don't have that option right now. Because what you're saying is that even if you sample intelligently, you will pick uniformly distributed subsets. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because you probably have more training data points than you actually need. As you have everything, you've covered all the behaviors because you have a lot of data points to cover all the behaviors. And then in some ranges, you have more data points than you actually need,
yeah.
Right? So with the kind of training procedure which where we slowly increment the training data set, I don't know what the outcome will be, but maybe it'll be that you'll need fewer data.
The reason I have extra points even on the same dimension, repeating points, is that because to overcome those little bit of experimental aberration problem.
Hmm.
So if you have more representation of the same point, you can rule out the some kind of averaging to give to N and to figure out.
Okay.
So maybe that you pick up one dimension, one point, but then maybe that's just an experimental aberration.
Mm-hmm.
So just to overcome, we give another point on the same allocation and the same competition level so that it can compare.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but we are talking about something else, which is the uniform distribution of the...
Yeah, what is happening is that if we, after the uniform distribution, when you pick up the fraction, things that, let's say 40% covers the entire range.
Mm.
All about that is excess, is a repetition. Then you pick 20%. It may stitch to the specific region. So what happened? ANN does biasness towards that area. So that's
I didn't quite understand what you're saying.
Thing is that ANN has that. I as far as my handling of ANN is experience is concerned, that if you pick up more points on the same region area. So let's say this is the output curve.
Uh-huh.
You have a lot of points here on the output,
uh-huh.
And very fewer points on the other parts of the output. What happens that ANN gives some kind of biasness,
uh-huh.
Bias over that region.
Bias. Okay. So you're saying that somehow the neural network itself can do better predictions in that area. Is that what you're saying? I mean, I don't understand what bias means in your mind. What kind of bias is this?
Bias is that it's kind of it actually overfits on that particular sub-region.
Oh, okay. Overfitting in that region.
Overfitting in that particular region.
Because you gave too many points there.
Too many points there.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that for the ANN not to do overfitting, you should make sure that the points are uniformly distributed?
Points are uniformly distributed.
I see.
It's an interesting theory.
So what is happening is that you 40%, it covers the range, it's perfect. Then you add 20% more, so add 60%. Maybe that 20% is sticking to a particular region. So that region is biased. So the overall accuracy gets a little lower.
I mean, in my view, that you do need those additional points to have enough accuracy. If you put too many of them in there, then maybe overfitting is there. Okay, well, at this point we have what we have. So, I mean, and what you're saying is that when you do the sampling, which is uniformly distributed, you have non-monotonic behavior with respect to accuracy, right? And that is kind of expected because you don't have enough points in the regions of interest. For instance, you don't have enough points in this region. Right. Now the question is, if you do add points in this region, does the ANN perform better or not? Maybe it has bias, but that bias is good in this case.
Because maybe that would be better. I haven't tried.
Yeah, we don't know. So,
so intelligence, you mean just follow the curve and pull out the points which are necessary.
That's what our original algorithm was doing. If you remember, or you know, in the HPCA paper, we had this whole big discussion about how to pick training data sets, right? And that came out after your original experience with ANNs. You said, okay, we need to do it this way. And now your story is different. You're saying that we need to do it with a uniform distribution.
My story is not different, though.
No, because remember, we came up with that elaborate procedure based on your experience with ANN.
Things that the point you say that right now I collected sufficient points to cover any algorithm output I have.
Yeah.
So it's basically I'm covering the entire range completely. This is a safe way to go. If you cover the entire range, you won't be.
We haven't talked about this anywhere in the paper, though. Covering the entire range. Uniformly. We don't say that in this paper.
That's why my concern is that if you elaborate that session, that session will highlight something that is not that cannot be explained or that is not explained in the paper. So that's
what. Uniformly picking the term data points is a common use for. Yeah, I don't think that's a problem.
We don't have to do it monetizing.
Although we could.
No one will
question
uniform distribution.
But that's what happens is when you reduce the training data size, is the reduced size, a subsize of the bigger size, is always the case. But you still get a non-monotonic behavior. Okay. That's possible. So it's not so the data points are not randomly, it's actually uniform, right?
As uniform as possible.
Right, but the problem is that when you do sampling, when you take a subset of those points,
it loses.
But it's
still uniformly distributed,
right?
Then that's not good enough anymore.
Yes, but that's okay because we are not claiming we are proposing intelligent training algorithm here.
But the problem is that we see a non-monotonic behavior on that particular graph.
Yeah.
And if a non-monotonic behavior comes up, then you have to explain.
We have to explain. We can't explain.
Why is non-monotonic graph?
I think it's understandable. We can't explain.
I think we explained in our previous paper.
Okay, if you guys think that it's not important enough to...
Yeah, I think
elaborate.
If we do propose the intelligent training algorithm like what we did before, then we have to do it differently. But then in this current version is not doing that. And
well, I thought you were doing it until now. but we are not. Okay. So, alright, so that's fine again. So then we shouldn't talk too much about the training process, I agree. We are not using that training process, why do we have it in the paper?
No, there are some of the processes we are we are following it.
What do you mean?
I mean, that's the one I described in this paper particularly. So first time taking out, so how an admin would proceed? It's like they will just figure out the boundary, what is the lowest and also, and just come up with few segments,
mm-hmm.
few segments. Only
okay.
let's say come up with two individual segments.
Mm-hmm.
When it is not enough, then further chop, again, instead of two segments, come up four intermediate
yeah.
segments. So that's the way you proceed. If you hit the threshold accuracy, you stop.
Okay. Did you read the previous algorithm that we wrote in the HPCA paper?
Yeah.
Is that the algorithm you're describing?
It's not because in that paper.
We talk about where to add more points. In which region do we add more points?
Not uniform. So adding more points is
done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then that's not the process you're using here because you're just recursively chopping and or
mm-hmm.
subdividing the input space. So we shouldn't use that. You know, we should talk about that other training process if you're not using it.
I think the problem is we talk about how to automate the training process after the HPCA paper, right? But it was never automated. If it is automated, then you would just take it and use it for this paper too.
Right, but I was so far under the impression that you're using that training process manually, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's not. Right?
I was under the impression too. I was just saying, if you have get a chance to automate that training process, in future, you always be able to use it without even thinking about it. Right? I think the things you have to always manually do it. So this time, you know, for sake of business, you didn't use that for CTO, and as a result, you used more data points than what you may actually need. Right? So you may want to think about how to automate it.
Mm.
Very simple, you know, program, so
mm-hmm.
simple script to automate it. Right?
I agree. Okay, so what next? That graph
that
we need to finish.
Yeah.
And what else is remaining? Go back. this is some sensitivity modeling overhead. Okay, modeling overhead is.
That graph also needs to be quite shortened.
Yeah.
So too big.
Yeah, and increase the size of the font
uh-huh.
once you shorten it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Increase contrast between the shades.
Yeah. It would be good if you put not applicable here.
Oh,
here.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Even the gray bars.
I think in those cases, because multi-resolution is basically single model, we can do the same error bars.
Oh, the same error bars. Okay.
I'm sorry, the same overhead bars.
Okay. Fine. Okay, and the discussion needs to be added here
mm-hmm.
for this section.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, so let's work on all of this and communicate over email about next steps. I need to work on 1 and 2. I know that when I find some time.
But my concern is if you add the discussion, if you add those things and everything, it will go into the 14 pages.
I think we can find space. I think that, you know, we can always condense sentences and paragraphs.
The other space around the figures,
yeah.
the tables.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not, I'm not concerned about that at this point. Okay. All right, so we should stop, I think.